Hello and welcome back. I'm your host, Cardi B. As many of you may already know, I'm a tarot reader and fashion industry survivor. I began learning tarot when I was still in grade school, and since then, I've turned that hobby into a full-time tarot practice and the creation of my own deck, Badass Bitches Tarot by Cardi B, as well as various tarot products and events. So this is the November episode of Ask Cardi B. We have a lot of great questions that we're going to address as we get through this episode, but I wanted to start off just talking about the energies. We've had a really, really intense Scorpio season, which it always is, that period of transformation and celebrating the death rebirth card and that metamorphosis. But I think that a lot of us have come through some really challenging times. And if there were no direct challenges, things that have triggered us, you know, all of my client readings, and I've been very, very busy, and I'm grateful for that and grateful for the connection and being able to help and offer some clarity. But I've seen so much just kind of pain and anxieties that are kind of coming to the surface. And I just want to say, if you have been in that, and even if, like me, it hasn't been something super major of, oh my gosh, I feel guilty that I'm even having this sadness or this grief or this anxiety, just know that this is part of that Scorpio shedding. When, you know, I've used the analogy of the scorpion molting its shell over this past month. I've used the analogy of the metamorphosis of a cocoon to a butterfly and being in kind of that goopy cocoon gook that we're definitely in November. And recently I was talking to one of my very best friends in Toronto, and she said, I feel like a just naked exposed nerve ending after a surgery, having to go out in the winter. And I think that was, you know, definitely a harsh but very vivid analogy. And for those of you watching the YouTube channel, this is kind of, I pulled this picture for the elder millennials out there that also loved Ren and Stimpy, this picture of Ren with his little like nerve endings from his teeth being exposed. And I think of this right now. If you're feeling like this little sad, painful, exposed nerve ending, think about when you were a kid and you pulled your tooth, and like, yes, you were excited because if you subscribed to the tooth fairy belief system, you're going to get rewards for that. And you felt this, you know, you're kind of growing up, you're getting rid of your baby teeth, and there was an excitement, but it was painful. And it took a while before those kind of nerve endings healed, and even longer before those new teeth that grew in. So be patient with yourself. We're in that in-between phase, and we're in that, you know, the feeling, the darkness, the feeling, the pain, feeling the trigger. So I just wanted to start off with that precursor, because it's come up for me around just missing my life, missing my friends, missing what my home was. So I know I'm feeling it in my own ways. I've seen it across all of my clients and very best friends the past couple of weeks. So we're in this together, and don't be afraid to let yourself feel it. Don't shame yourself for when you are sad, when you are in darkness. It's part of the healing. It's part of that exposed little nerve ending of Scorpio season. But we are in our first official day of Sagittarius. So before I go back through the cards of the month, and as you know, I always address the card of the month ruled by the majority of it. So we had the majority of Scorpio in November. We have the death card. But we are in officially Sagittarius today. So I know that there's the whole now the 13th sign of Ophiuchus, and we're going to look at that because there was a question that came through in my Ask Cardi B questions from viewers and listeners. So I'll talk more about Ophiuchus and how it affects the transition of the signs. But we are in Sagittarius as of today. I'm a Sagittarius sun, arguably Ophiuchus. I kind of have aspects of both for sure. But because of that, we kind of are feeling that transition from that deep water sensitivity, a lot of, again, this like naked nerve ending vibes, into a little bit more fire, a little bit more expansion with Sagittarius's ruler of Jupiter coming into play. And also, as Mars went direct, there may be some fieriness around that, as that occurred last week, of like that, oh, like a little bit of aggression. When we think of Mars, it rules Aries. It's the initiator. It's also the planet of war and destruction. But that moving direct with the initiation feeling, and that like, let's get things done, let's get this party going, I do think there's a little bit more momentum with that fire of Sagittarius and the expansion of Jupiter. So things to look forward to. We're not necessarily out of the woods yet, but things to look forward to this coming week. We're also headed toward cards, and I'll get more into this when we're in the actual week of each eclipse, but we're heading into eclipse season first with November 30th, which is technically the start of Ophiuchus, if you are following that kind of new 13th sign. And that's a lunar eclipse during the full moon in Gemini on the 30th. And then we move into our Monday, December 14th eclipse in Sagittarius, which is a solar eclipse with the sun in Sag. So we're kind of kicking off those final eclipsing out of energies. And, you know, that has always been an intense time of the year. And it's probably going to be even more so in ways for 2020. But we'll look a little bit more at that because I think someone did ask me in one of the questions about eclipse season. But before we get into our awesome questions for the week, let's take a look at our cards of the month. This is our last episode for the November card. So we have the Death Rebirth card. And again, this is ruled by both the crown and solar plexus. So where do we find that balance between kind of the universe, the channeling, and that control of solar plexus? And that kind of is what causes that shift, that molting out of our shell, that kind of transitioning, transforming as we find the harmony between what's being downloaded of how we're feeling, that we feel called to evolve, to move forward, and how we're kind of trying to still maintain some of that power in solar plexus without it letting overtake in an egoic way. So it is a fine balance, but it is a beautiful time. It can be painful. It can be triggering. It can be harder than we think, even things that we've moved through. You know, we always talk about how healing is not linear. It's spiralic. And a lot of us in this death rebirth energy are experiencing grief. We experience grief and death, whether that is an actual loss of a person or people you've lost in this time, the transition from a career that somewhat defined you, a relationship that may have defined you, or like me, I keep saying, New York City really defined me, and I miss it. I miss pre-COVID New York. I don't miss COVID New York at all, but I miss pre-COVID New York every single day. I had a really beautiful life. I had amazing friends, all of whom have left the city, but I had a really beautiful existence there, and I am mourning that. And I go through different stages of grief with that. So if you're in grief around one or many aspects of things that have occurred this year, that's part of the process. That's part of the healing. Our second card, we have Four of Wands, but reversed. And we've been talking this month about how Four of Wands and the reversal, either way, this is a good card. It's a card of prosperity, of abundance, of success coming into us and contributing to our foundation. But the Four of Wands is a little bit more of our individual success in that. And this is kind of where, coupled with the Death Rebirth card for November, where can we really work on our individual healing? And this is going to be different. We're all going through different triggers, different grief processes around this, different stages of transformation, different stages of awakening and ascension. And when we really tap into our own and kind of filter out some of the outside noise where we can, these successes in Four of Wands reverse are going to be even more heightened and even greater to our authentic and aligned selves versus trying to compare that healing process, whether it's trying to catch up with somebody, whether it's trying to be in gratitude and joy when you need to be in sadness and grief. This is kind of, you know, as we're true to that, it's going to allow that individualized success of Four of Wands to come into play even greater. So I do feel like, you know, there's beauty in the breakdown, so to speak, because with this process, we still have like successes and wins coming in. And you may already be seeing this. We're now ending out November. You may already have seen that you had work successes, things that you had been waiting on, and a little bit of that stagnant energy when Mars was retrograde and Mercury was retrograde the previous month, things paying off, coming through, opportunities at your door, showing that there are green lights. Even in this time that has been incredibly challenging in many ways, these green lights are coming in, and in a big way, and I think will continue, honestly, well into Sagittarius season for many of us. All right, so let's take a look at our card of the week. Hold on 1 second. Ooh, Four of Swords. We have a lot of fours because we had... Do we already have any other fours this month? I know, well, we have Four of Wands. Fours are foundation, you know? And let me find the four in the Smith-Rider-Waite for us. So I can show you the artwork side by side for those of you who are watching. Okay, so fours are, you know, numerologically speaking, they're ruled by the Emperor. They are foundation cards. And when we look at this astrologically, Four of Wands is ruled by Jupiter in Libra. So it's kind of expansion through balance, expansion through, and we look at Libra as ruling the Justice card, balance and boundaries, expansion of Jupiter through balance and boundaries. And when we look at this, Smith Rider Waite, we'll look at the OG card first, right? And it's this knight. I always tell the story of when I was a kid, I would look at this card, see this mofo laying on this slab of marble with the, you know, sword underneath him and the three above. And I would think, oh my God, this guy is dead. And it was kind of an ominous card to me when I was learning. And then I, you know, the older that I became, and I became less scared of sitting in solitude, which it's funny how things that are scarier than healing to you as you go through your own process. But I learned that this is really the meditation card, the card of going within and kind of filtering out the outside world where you need to. The other thing I find interesting about the OG deck, and I did not incorporate this into mine, which I made mine Pema Chodron, because I think she just embodies that, of that ability to tap into your inner knowing, which, you know, by extension is the universal knowing, the Akash, the channel to all that is and to source and to universe. So I think her, with her teachings in Buddhism and meditation, she's really rocking the Four of Swords energy better than anyone that I, whose teachings I've come across yet anyway. So she's really, you know, embodying the Four of Swords in the Badass Bitches Tarot. But one of the other things I found interesting in the Smith Rider Waite deck is that you see this window, this stained glass window above the knight who's laying down, and it shows a woman and a child in the background. And I think this is really also a little hint and a wink to acknowledging your divine femininity in this time, this coming week of Four of Wands, and your access to your inner child. Where can we bring that in? And when we think about the divine feminine, it's really, how can we receive? How can we nourish our and care for ourselves and receive when we're so used to going, doing, achieving? I watch so many people working in the corporate world that have, you know, after the first couple weeks, even like maybe longer, maybe months, when there was some empathy and like, oh, we don't know how long this is going to go. Take the time you need, reset. Now it's just like, how many Zoom calls can you cram in? How much can, you know, now that there's no commute, you can be emailing around the clock. You can be taking Zoom calls until dinner, and then, you know, you don't have to pick your kid up from school. So I think that we've lost a little bit of that nurturing to ourselves and honestly, somewhat to each other, depending on what work we're doing and what environment we're in. Where can we really tap into that divine femininity and the inner child of what do we truly need? Like I always say, this is different for everyone. One of my favorites that you all know I talk about, I love to curl up in my pajamas with Lola and watch Ancient Aliens. That is something that like my inner nerdy child just freaking loves, and I find it very healing. I also love bubble baths, which is still very inner child-like. Where can you nourish these parts of yourself this week in Four of Swords? The other thing about Four of Swords is it's kind of a card of holding space for yourself. And this comes up for me a lot, and I know a lot of you that listen are also readers and healers. And as readers and healers, you know, we are the space holders, right? We're holding that space for others, and we're helping to serve as catalysts for growth and for healing. And a lot of times it can feel like, who's going to hold space for us? And we need to do it for ourselves too, just like we encourage. I'm sure so many of you are like me, and you encourage your clients to take that time to, you know, take the time to meditate or take a bath or take a walk, but you struggle when it's you. And this is really, you know, when we ask the question of who holds space for the space holders, can you do it for yourself first? Because that's really showing the universe, I'm capable of it, I deserve it. And where can you feel safe to receive in the divine feminine energy from others? One of the things also in Four of Swords, I look at the boundaries. He's in this room. It's like a monk in silence, bringing back Pema Chodron. What are your boundaries? You know, is it to be in silence from the world to a degree? Are you going to turn your phone off at a certain time? Are you not going to answer emails after a certain time? I have had hard boundaries with friends that push me for readings when I've told them I don't do same day, and I don't like to be asked for kind of on the fly readings. And I've had to really just put my boundaries up with, this doesn't feel good. It's giving me anxiety. It's making me feel very unsafe and unstable. Where are your boundaries this week in Four of Swords, and where do you need to uphold them? I'm going to also say the last kind of tip for Four of Swords is, where do you take in? Where do you recharge? Because this is also different for everybody. I'm someone who, this has been really challenging for me, the loss of New York City and my life pre-COVID, because I recharge through, I'm a huge extrovert, through human connection. And I'm so grateful that I get to do this work for a living, and that I get so much beautiful and vulnerable and genuine, authentic human connection every day through readings. But I do miss, you know, the in-person of that mystery of, am I going to meet my next best friend? Am I going to meet my next great love, my next business collaborator going out? And that's kind of been stripped away from my life for the unknown foreseeable future. And I had to ask myself, where did I recharge that didn't involve, because it's really easy to be like, well, this was the thing and I can't do it because it's, you know, of the world we're now living in. And one of the things that I really, really recharge with is walking. And I think I've talked about this before. I'm a huge walking meditator. I do sit seated and guided meditations as well, but walking meditations are very, very healing for me. And I'm very grateful that I do have areas in this little community that I now live in with walking trails and also this little main street. And that's the thing when I've been feeling really low the past couple of weeks of, I go out and I walk. I had actually an amazing reader, The Half-Ass Witch. If you don't follow TJ at The Half-Ass Witch, very talented. And she said to me the first time she ever did an energy reading for me, she was like, oh, you're really interesting. And I was like, why is that? There's many reasons I'm weird and interesting. And she said, you're a witch that receives your energy through your root chakra, like through your feet, and you give it out through your third eye. So it's kind of like through that walking, through that grid work and the connection to earth, and through my root chakra, I absorb the energy to refuel, to fill my cup up, to be able to give it back out through my third eye in readings. So where do you recharge? Where do you fill up your cup? And where can you, and I know there's many ways that we cannot, that we would love to, given the, you know, the restrictions in the world right now, but where is it that you can still access that replenishment in Four of Swords this week? All right. So I'm now going to take a look at our questions. So the first question, I like this because it actually goes back to Four of Swords. So this is a good segue. I've noticed that you and many readers do not offer, just talked about this, do not offer same day readings / have a period of time before readings are made available. Is this just out of popularity or energetic protection? At Beth McGrath 76. Thank you, Beth. This is a great question for both readers and for clients, actually. So for me, it's both. You know, I am grateful to say I'm at a place in my practice and my career that I have a big following of repeat clientele and in collaborations and things like just being on the That's So Retrograde podcast, which, thank you, Elizabeth and Stephanie. I got a lot of amazing new clients through that. So sometimes it's, you know, I'm booked for a large span of time out, and that's just because, yes, it has been already scheduled with other clients. But also when I say it's both for me, I do not do same day readings. I really don't like to. Number one, because I like to have a mindset, like I sage my space, this tarot parlor that I have. I do a mini kind of prayer of calling in what's, you know, helpful, healing, and empowering for each individual client before I start. But I start my chunk of the days that I'm reading and the periods that I'm reading with a longer, more intense meditation. So there are things that I do for my practice that intensify and allow the energies and my guides as well as yours to come through. The other thing, I really don't like having to read for people that are in very frantic energy. So I will say, as a client, if you're like, I need to know right now, it's the age old adage of try to sleep on it. Because when you go to a reader, a healer, an intuitive with that energy, it's very hard for us, at least for me, I can't speak for everybody. For me, it's very hard for me to decipher through that frantic energy to get to your guides, to get to the outside energies that are trying to come through into the reading. And a lot of that intensified frantic energy comes across as like, tell me what I want to hear. And it's hard for me then to kind of get through that. So that's why it's a boundary for me. I know on the flip side, there are other readers, Phil Good, for example, he doesn't like to have any connection with his clients too far in advance. So he'll post and be like, hey, I'm doing readings in 10 minutes. And he puts the kind of protections spell intent to the universe of the right person is going to book with me right now. So he tends to get people that are kind of, you know, on that level of just seeking deeper knowledge, soul purpose, where, you know, where they're headed in their journey kind of thing through the way that he works, which I highly admire. And I, you know, we all work differently. So as a reader, on the reader side of thing, to answer this, this is a long answer to your question. If you're coming from a reader standpoint, whatever feels aligned and safe for you and gives you the ability to have the most clarity in a session, do it that way. And, you know, as a client, I would say if you can really try to give it 24 hours from that point of like, I need to know this information. You know, this thing just happened and I'm not feeling okay. Try. It's really, and that's Four of Swords energy even of like, where can you really be in your own energy, even if it's pain, even if it's really terrifying uncertainty, because you're gonna get some healing in that time. And even probably when you're open to it, messages from your guides in that time, you may come the next day and you don't even need to pay for a reading because you've gotten some answers in taking that 24 hour period. Or you may say, I still want some clarity in this reading, but you're coming a little bit more of a state of allowing your guides to come through, allowing our energies to connect in a way that the reader can tune in to the outside energies and your guides more clearly. So I hope that that was helpful. Beth, thank you for that question. All right, question number two. What do you know about the 13th sign, i.e. Ophiuchus, and what are your thoughts on those that are technically shifting to this astrological sign? J. Gillette Star 333. Ophiuchus or Ophiuchus, I've heard it pronounced different ways, is the 13th sign that starts between November 23rd, and honestly, I've heard everything from ending on December 10th, which is my birthday, December 17th, December 18th. So anyone who knows the actual end date of Ophiuchus, please, please write it in. I've Googled this, I've researched it, and different, like, not, you know, there's different articles quoting NASA. I haven't found NASA's like one end all be all answer on this. So anyone who knows the frame of dates would be super helpful just for my own nerdy knowledge. But yeah, this is a great question. And a more kind of muggle based individual recently said to me in question around Ophiuchus, well, don't they just make it all up? So they made up a 13th sign. Like, what does that mean? And obviously from my, I'm very biased as an astrology and tarot witch here, but no, it's not all made up. These star constellations have been studied since the ancient Babylonians, right? And from an astronomy standpoint, NASA's comment on this was, when Babylonians defined the constellations 3,000 years ago, they chose to leave out a 13th sign. And they kind of assume or are guessing that it's because they wanted a 12-month calendar, and the division of that made it a little bit easier and a little bit cleaner working with 12 over 13. NASA also noted that the zodiac signs are simply constellations that are in line with the Earth and the Sun as the planet follows its orbit. So Earth actually travels through all of those 13 signs, and yes, including Ophiuchus, right? But the Babylonians, for whatever reason, decided we're going to work with these 12. Okay. So I'm going to say, for what this is worth, like I always do, take whatever resonates with you here. I'm playing with both, honestly. I am in this little cluster that is technically Ophiuchus, and I've grown up as a Sagittarius, and I definitely feel like traits of both, the symbolism of both, the archetypes of both resonate with me. So from a metaphysical perspective, 13 is this really magical number, right? It's the 13th sign. 13 is divine femininity. There are 13 moons, you know, relating to lunar energy. So women have 13 menstrual cycles. If you're on like a quote unquote regular cycle, 28 times 13 is 365. It's also the number that it's funny. It's considered very intense frequency. Now, whether this is good or bad, this is kind of up in the air, because there is the lucky 13 of the lunar cycles. There's also 13 of Jesus Christ plus his 12 apostles equals 13. There were also 13 of them at the Last Supper. Is that considered a bad omen? There used to be this kind of old tradition of you don't have 13 people at a dinner party because, you know, the Last Supper was literally the Last Supper for JC. And then also we obviously have our card of the month. The Death card is the 13th in Major Arcana. Arcana. And some people look at, is death bad luck? I mean, we have this, like, in the traditional deck, this scary Skeletor dude, right? And people think, like, oh my gosh, death. But I always say, with the Death Rebirth card, Louise Hay in my deck, who's the best luck, the queen of modern day metaphysical healing. So there's two sides to this coin. It's definitely undoubtable that it's a powerful energy, 13, right? But it's kind of, do with this what you will. It's been, 13 has been overtaken by black magic occultists for a long time. So we have that fear around, you know, people that don't put a 13th floor in hotels and in high rise buildings, the fear of Friday the 13th. But I look at this as, like, if you think of a pen or a keyboard, very powerful, right? It's the whole cheesy, the pen is mightier than the sword. You can do so much with written information. It can heal, it can awaken, but it can also, as we're seeing in the mainstream media, I'm just going to put that in there, do a lot of damage. It can incite a lot of fear. So like, this is powerful, and it's, if you use the power of the number 13 for good or for evil, you know, there's a lot of power there. I want to use it for good. Of course, it's me. It's the annoying optimist. The other aspect of Ophiuchus is it's represented the way that Sagittarius is that archer, the half man, the half centaur. It's represented as the serpent bearer. And I love this because all of you who follow me know I definitely identify as Slytherin house. I love snakes. I do a lot of snakeskin ritual work. I think they're very beautiful, very powerful animals representing transformation, representing really life and rebirth. So the Ophiuchus is kind of, I see it as combinations of Scorpio, and kind of that when we think of the serpent versus, you know, like similar to the scorpion, and there's that depth and that on the negative, it can be power hungry, it can be temperamental, but they're also healers. Ophiuchus is known as the healer, the sign of the healer. They're also super, super magnetic and impulsive and flamboyant, which, hello Sagittarius in the house. So I think that this is a really interesting combo. And if you fall in that in the Ophiuchus kind of realm of you were previously identifying as Sagittarius or Scorpio, you're going to find that this probably kind of makes sense for you. So whether you identify as the sign fully, or I really kind of, like I said, I identify as both. It's kind of how I lived. I was born in the middle of Pennsylvania and spent, you know, some high school years in Amsterdam and the Netherlands and Toronto. I really identify with all of those cultures. And I kind of feel like that for those of you finding out that you might be Ophiuchus. All right. So thank you. That's a good question. It's actually been coming up just in vernacular a lot lately. And our third question, what do we know about going into eclipse season this year? I always find them a bit rocky, to be honest. Any advice you have to work with, or any cards to embody? At 100% that witch 88. Oh my gosh, I love this. Thank you, because that's an amazing Instagram handle. So this is talking about the eclipses, and yes, I did say these are going to be more intense this year than ever. So it starts Monday, November 30th. We have that full moon in Gemini lunar eclipse, and this is also that start of Ophiuchus season. So thinking of the healer, that the snake bearer, and kind of that balance of how do we heal, but how do we still embrace our power with that kind of magnetic impulsive side of the little sadness in that. I would say card-wise, this is a good question of what cards do I recommend to work with here. I would say Eight of Swords. Eight of Swords astrologically is ruled by Jupiter in Gemini. So when we think of Eight of Swords, it's kind of like that feeling of expanding out of bondage, right? Because it's the card that she's standing in this valley of swords with her eyes in a blindfold and her arms tied behind her back. And when we think about what can we, in this lunar eclipse in Gemini, what can we release? What can we break through? And I'll, in a lot of ways, this is the air energy of swords with communication. So I feel like, here we go. I feel like this is, how can we utilize the full moon releasing that, you know, coming to a full culmination? What are we releasing? What are we clearing? And how can we use our throat chakra, that air energy, to break through? These can be lists that we write ourselves, affirmations for ourselves, truths that we declare to the world. But I would really work with this energy of Eight of Swords, of that breaking through Jupiter and Gemini, Gemini for the first of our two eclipses on November 30th. The second, Monday, November 14th, which is the new moon in Sag, solar eclipse. So with this, I would say new moon in Sag, the moon in Sag is, nine of wands. Yes, nine of wands. Let me find this card. Here we go. So nine of wands is astrologically ruled by the moon in Sagittarius, which makes sense because this is the card of perseverance. In that new moon in Sag, it's kind of what are we still, as we've done all of this transformative work in Scorpio, and as we enter into Ophiuchus and Sagittarius, where can we, what are we still like, no, I'm still holding on to that. That is still worth fighting for. That's still worth like holding on to as something that I know is a cause, a part of me, my life's purpose, my soul's work. What is it worth holding on to as we enter that new moon in Sag on the 14th? So yeah, I would say nine of wands for sure. That's a good one. All right. The last question. Oh, this is a fun one. I like this. Last question comes from a client of mine in Toronto, Jolene. Hey, Jolene. Cardzy, do you have any good books for a little moment of escapism in this time? I always love your witchy book and movie recommendations. Also might be doing a little bit of brief travel around the holidays. Would appreciate any good reads. I do. In terms of, so books specifically, I think we've touched on movies many times. Books specifically, I really love the fun escapism in Amy McKay's Witches of New York. And it's so funny because so much of me is like morning New York, but this is like old New York. I think late 1890s, around that era. So it's like a different era. And there's been many deaths and rebirths of New York in that cycle. So that in and of itself is encouraging to me. But what I love about Witches of New York around this time of year is both the original and the sequel, which is called Half Spent Was the Night, take place in short windows of time. So the build up to Witches of New York is from I think September into Samhain. So like autumn equinox into Samhain, Halloween, and kind of the events that occur throughout that. There's people that are persecuting witches, these kind of like witch hunters, like under the underground, that are very religious, very quote unquote Christian, and the struggles that these healers were undergoing in that time when it was kind of much more closeted to be able to do this healing work. So Witches of New York, amazing, start there. And then the sequel, which is really cool because we're getting into this time period, takes place then in between I think like late November, December, leading up to the Yule celebrations and around that. And that's shorter. I pulled that one out to show you. I took the book jacket off because I was reading it in the bath, but then the actual book got damaged here. So I'm super irresponsible with my books. But it's a really fast read. It's probably like 100 pages, honestly, and super fun and great for this time of year. So I hope that was helpful. I actually have to run. I'm taking an amazing herbology class with my bestie, Christina, here, my Pennsylvania bestie. We're taking a fire cider class. And that's one of my Four of Swords moments of like, that kind of stuff is really healing for me. I am, again, technically Ophiuchus, also a lot of Sagittarian vibes. So the Sag part of me that loves knowledge, that loves to learn, the philosopher. And I find like learning new things, especially when I can apply them as healing, and gifts to others. So I'll probably be making some fire cider for the fam this Christmas season. But I'm gonna go head to a class. I'm heading out, but thank you so much. I will be, so I wasn't on Instagram Live. I got some notes and questions about that. I was slammed with readings, completely exhausted, grateful again to be able to do this work, but was back to back, was not able to get a full half hour in to do my live. I will be on the live 7:30 Eastern this Monday. Great chance to get a live mini reading, please tune in. Also doing some additional collaborations, a Sagittarius moon ceremony with Stephanie, and she is from Little Moon Mystic. She's been on the podcast twice. She's one of my best friends. We're going to be doing that. More information to follow as soon as we have dates around that. Also coming up with the Happy House charity, another collaboration with them, as well as Modern Sanctuary. And if you didn't check out the episode of my guest appearance on That So Retrograde, check it out. It's amazing. It's the link, I think, is on my site. It was last week's episode, and it's all about tarot magic, which I know you all love. So thank you so much. Have an incredible week. Happy Thanksgiving to all of those of you in the U.S. that are celebrating. I hope you have a beautiful one. And as always, stay magical AF.